And welcome to the Climate Minute, your source for insight and perspective on global warming news. The show is for the week of February 20th, 2022. The global CO2 levels are about 420 ppm, and there's roughly 2,870 days left until the year 2030. The clock's ticking. Anyway, recently here in the New England area, there's been a bit of a kerfuffle about a very arcane topic. Topic is who gets to provide us electricity in the year 2025. Okay. This all descends into jargon fairly quickly, but the grid system is always looking 2 or 3 years ahead and wants to accept bids in an auction style thing as to who thinks they can provide the lowest cost power in the year 2025. This auction, this market is run by an organization called the Independent Systems Operator, ISO is the acronym. And they, cutting to the chase, Sabrina Chankman in the Globe recently revealed that ISO New England has imposed this a rule, and the rule is called the Minimum Offer Price Rule, MOPR. Again, a lot of jargon and arcane stuff. Basically, imposing that rule means that cheap renewable energies cannot get on the electric grid in New England in the year 2025. That is not a good thing. And so there's a lot of issues about why. It was surprising that ISO New England made this choice to reverse its stance on this funky rule about forward auctions. So just in terms of, we're going to talk a little bit about this, but just in terms of who the players are, FERC is an acronym for Federal Energy Regulatory Commission, FERC. They are the federal overseers of everything. ISO is ISO New England, Independent Systems Operators, and ISO is chartered by FERC. They manage the grid. They have a lot of sort of subcommittees that do stuff for them. There's an idea of a forward capacity market, okay? So what they want to do is to allow people to bid in an auction to have a power plant ready to go, a capacity to make electricity in the year 2025, okay? And they do that every few years. There is a minimum offer price rule, the MOPR, MOPR, which sets a floor. And the idea was to protect the markets from crazy bad players, but the MOPR rule has been recognized as being not so good in the age of renewables. There are other players. There's the Massachusetts Municipal Wholesale Energy Corporation, MWEC, again, acronyms, that is trying to build a power plant in Peabody, Massachusetts, that we've talked about a lot. The other underlying buzzword here that you have to hear about is battery storage. In other words, you can take electricity and put it in a big battery, industrial scale battery, that then gets put back out on the grid. All very clean. You don't need a new power plant. So there's a story behind this. How come the MOPR rule, the MOPR rule, got extended to the detriment of renewable energy? And what role, I mean, how did that all happen? And because of that, we are happy to talk to somebody who thinks about this stuff, has looked at it, is a full-time guy teaching at Boston University with a regular job, but still finds the time to search through arcane literature to figure out what's going on, because he's essentially a good guy. We have with us today Nathan Phillips, who is a professor of earth and environment at Boston University. Nathan, welcome aboard. How are you doing?
I'm doing well, Ted. Good to see you again.
So there's this whole thing about the minimum offer price rule. Again, it's a jargon, MOPR. It controls who gets to bid to make electricity in the year 2025. You've been you've been playing detective, looking for information, right? What is the story? What have you found out about this whole to-do? Tell me.
Okay. Well, I feel like it's not really doing detective work. It's stumbling down into rabbit holes, but finding that these rabbit holes have some very interesting things in them. And so, like everyone else, I read that Globe article by Sabrina Shankman about this ISO setting back renewables by 2 years across the entire New England grid. And, you know, I was crestfallen like everyone else that wants to see us move at the speed we need to. And so then I just stumbled across a tweet by the electricity and energy genius and grid expert on Twitter, who was basically discussing that ruling and had a screenshot of the FERC concurrence on that ISO MOPR order. Okay. So I look at the screenshot and my eye catches this MWEC, M-M-W-E-C. So that just caught my eye because MWEC is this Massachusetts consortium of municipalities that is the same entity that's trying to build this horrible Peabody Peaker plant. So why is MWEC showing up in the national FERC docket related to this sweeping 2-year order by ISO? And that's what sent me down the rabbit hole. And I come to have realized that in that entire FERC docket, which is about 30 different filings.
So the FERC docket is something that is accessible to anyone online. It's on the internet. These are public documents, right? The trick is to get high enough up the learning curve to say, oh, I need a docket number, and then I can drill in, and there's all these PDFs there. You have done that. We will put a link to the docket and the docket number. Anyone can go look at these documents, right? So when you say down the rabbit hole, all of a sudden you have this PDF full of boilerplate that you're trying to interpret, right?
Indeed. And the FERC docket number for everyone is called ER22-391. So if you type that into FERC.gov, you'll get right there. It's about 30 documents long. And although there is a lot there, there's a ton of redacted, blacked out text throughout, and some whole documents themselves are considered privileged. So there's a lot that's hidden, but there's kind of like shadows of the backdoor dealings and the behind the scenes dealings that are quite troubling.
So tell me what's in the shadows? What did you see? And I would say, again, what you have uncovered are circumstantial things, coincidences that make your eyebrows go up a little bit, stuff like that. So tell me that story.
Sure. And, you know, I don't know facts. These are circumstantial things, but I'm just asking questions. And so one thing that surprised me as I started to wade through these 30 documents is that the number one cited case in this entire docket and the number of responses is about MWEC and a proposed lithium ion battery storage project that they had bid along with the wind company Anbaric, who is also involved in offshore wind in along the East Coast and elsewhere, to build this battery storage project in Ludlow, Massachusetts, at the headquarters of MWEC, called the Westover Energy Storage Center. Now, that's a 100-megawatt project they were bidding into, and the Peabody Peaker plant is a 60-megawatt fossil fuel peaker plant, and the one really kind of like obviates the other, okay? But this battery storage project was denied by ISO New England. They said that the price was too low, okay? That it was too affordable, in so many words.
Really?
Yes. And meanwhile, MWEC, 4 days after they put in the bid on this 100-megawatt battery project, 4 days after that, on June 22nd, they had a public meeting where they were talking about how batteries are not feasible and how batteries can't do what the Peabody Peaker does. So in my view, they were attempting to bid into the forward capacity auction, the same market that the Peabody Peaker goes into, okay?
So to just do, back out, just hold, what we're saying is that MWEC and Anna Barak, two companies come together in Ludlow, proposing to build a battery, 100 megawatt of battery storage, which would then come online in the year 2025 or 26. And what they want to do is they're offering this into this auction, lowest price kind of thing that ISO is thinking 2 years ahead, saying, okay. And the same in that same auction would be a 60 megawatt natural gas plant in Peabody. And okay, so that's how this forward capacity market brings together the battery in Westover, the peaker plant in Peabody. Okay, and you're saying that there were apparently a heck of a coincidence between saying batteries are bad in Peabody, but oh, don't look to my other hand is putting 100 megawatts of battery in Ludlow, right?
Yes, indeed. So they were bidding into the same market. I'm not sure if they were bidding into the same exact auction.
Okay.
But it was the same market, and it's the same kind of capacity market, like as you explained earlier, that MWEC publicly is telling the it can't really do what the Peabody Peaker is supposed to do. Well, why are they actually trying to go to the same market with that? And I mean, in fact, the MWEC did pause for 30 days. They paused their process for the Peabody Peaker. And the CEO of MWEC is on the record as saying that one of the reasons for the pause is they wanted to look at battery, other alternative technologies that could be like a different path forward than the Peabody Peaker. So yeah, it's circumstantial, but it seems, you know, very close in time, in which they were putting this bid in at the same time that they're trying to kind of keep all options open is one way to look at it.
So there's that. And then, so this is sort of the grain of the last straw on the camel's back, right? That somehow precipitates this issue with the MOPR, the minimum offer price rule. And can you said before that ISO New England, which is the governing body for the whole grid, rejected this 100 megawatt battery storage in Ludlow because it was too cheap. It was too, I mean, have you been able to understand that? It seems like a head slammer, right? Why would ISO reject the cheapest alternative?
Yeah, this is where Sabrina Shankman's article comes really in handy, because she explains it that it really is, when it comes down to it, it's a way to protect the fossil fuel generators, and the incumbent generators is the way that Chair Glick of FERC puts it, from these two affordable renewables that are coming online. They can't deal with it. It would displace fossil interests too quickly. And one thing that is troubling about this to me is that the entity that was, well, there are two real influential entities in getting this 100 megawatt battery storage project denied. And that was two ISO entities called the Internal Market Monitor, as well as the External Market Monitor. These are two bodies that are associated with and yet stated to be independent of the ISO. And it's very hard to get information on the Internal Market Monitor, names, professional biographies, anything. It's just this, on the ISO, it's stated as a group of people, a group of experts, but we don't know who those experts are. We don't know who pays them. We don't know if they have ties to industry. It's unclear. And so there needs to be a light shined on the Internal Market Monitor. The External Market Monitor also is there's questions.
So do you know, again, you're not an expert in this, so I don't want to put you on the spot for things you don't know. When you talk about internal, so I'm hearing internal monitor, external monitor. So that means internal to ISO and external to ISO, or some kind of internal market and an external market that it seems like you would have sort of in-house people helping you and then out of house that are maybe more, less tied to the organization. Do you know? No.
It's like a, I don't know, an intricate game of some sort where these are the rules of the game and they've set up these entities. And the, you know, with the pretense of independence, there's, you know, and yet the external market monitor communicates with the internal market monitor and vice versa. They share information, they share data. You know, it's really very, very interesting, but, you know, there needs to be transparency and there needs to be accountability. And as far as this lay person that's gone down the rabbit hole can look, there is none.
Yeah. Let me come back to the minimum offer price rule, right? So this is, we'll put up the link to the Shankman article, but my understanding is the following. Tell me if you may not know as well, and they think as this is complex, but the minimum offer price rule, I think, is supposed to protect against market manipulation. And so what the sort of excuse here is to say, well, if you have a battery storage system, ISO needs to take out or ignore the tax benefits that you might get from the state or any incentives that you get. And so therefore, ISO looks at it and says, oh, your thing should cost, if you just paid for that battery without any of these tax benefits, it would cost X amount, and that's going to be your price. And then, you know, you don't make the grade. Somehow there is this effort to, I guess what I'm trying to chase is, what's the technical mechanism of the offer price rule that rules out the renewables? I think it's because ISO gets to take the incentives that the state provides and ignore them when they do their should cost calculation. Does that ring true to you? I mean, again, you're not an expert either. We're both here, holding different parts of the elephant, so to speak, trying to figure out what the shape is. But
yeah, sure. I'm not sure that it's solely about subsidies. I think it's it might be broader than that, about just ability to fairly compete on the market. Now, it's understandable that, we see it in other sectors where some behemoth will, put other companies underwater, basically, by, lowering their price until they can drive, some business out and then swallow them up. You know, we see that in other sectors of the economy, and there should be rules that prevent that kind of market manipulation from occurring, just market power, sheer market power to build a monopoly kind of thing. But this is going well, appears to have gone well beyond that. And I think the FERC concurrence, even though it did end up supporting what ISO did, they had a fairly blistering response about how there is a place for, a Mopar kind of protection against this predatory market power type of thing. But it can, and in these cases, have become, actually a negative, because it's preventing actual competition from happening on the grid. And the thing is that they point to is that they're trying to use the same market rules that govern things like peaker plants and base load plants, the fossil generators, with these battery storage projects that are coming on that have different economics to them, different financing to them. They are trying to rope them into and conform to an outdated fossil paradigm, basically.
That's an interesting point. So just to be clear, my understanding is that there are services that you can get and be paid for. If you are a battery supply, if you have a battery storage, you are able to help the grid adjust and maintain the 60 hertz frequency on the entire grid, because you have enough, I don't really understand the details, but you have the ability to help maintain the integrity of just the 60 hertz on the grid. A peaker plant does not have that. And so what you're saying is that they're trying to jam this battery thing into a model that talks about a peaker plant that just makes electricity, whereas the battery has other ways to make money and should be included. And that's an unfair. Okay, so let me come back. So we've got the MOPR rule, my understanding is that in November or so, FERC, the Federal Energy Regulatory Commission, recommended that ISO New England drop this funky MOPR rule, you know, it, just get rid of it because it's for all the reasons you've described. But then in January, all of a sudden, ISO New England did an about face based on the internal market monitor and the external market monitor recommendations, which came from God knows where, right? And all of a sudden, ISO decides, oh, no, we're going to keep this rule that protects the fossil fuel plants for another 2 years. So is that true? And can you draw, I mean, I feel like I'm one of these guys in a TV crime novel with a corkboard and string, you know, connecting things, all right? Is there any connection between the MWEC, the 100 megawatts battery that MWEC wanted to put into Ludlow, to this MOPR rule that happened at the federal level? I mean, is there a connection there, or is it just...
Yes, I mean, there has to be, because on the FERC docket, of the 30-some documents, it's the number one most cited case in all of them is the MWEC and Varick battery project. So, you know, and also within those documents, that set of documents, in multiple filings, the Peabody Peaker plant is mentioned and referred to. And so I think people like your guests from Acadia and other experts, Sabrina Shankman, they know a whole lot more about the overall MOPAR ISO thing. But the connection to MWEC and Peabody is the thing that I stumbled onto and am still taking a deep dive into, trying to figure out how this connected. But it is connected because it is cited far and away more than any other case. Really? In that FERC docket. There are other projects that went into that FERC docket. Like another denied project was called the Wendell Storage Energy Center by Borrego Solar, I think. And they were denied as well for another reason. They were denied because they were hinging their financing on the Build Back Better Biden funding that didn't materialize. Oh, so they were summarily dismissed for that reason. But again, the number one cited case. It's kind of like court cases use precedent. In this case, it appears to me as a layperson that this case was influential, if not precipitating, in the ISO order to extend the MOPAR for another 2 years. So I think of this like, you know, they talk about the shot heard around the world. The Peabody Peaker has been thought of by some people as like, oh, that little bad project over there in little Peabody. It's only 60 megawatts, no big deal. It's bad, shouldn't have happened, but it's peanuts compared to everything else. Well, I'm wondering if the Peabody Peaker is the shot heard around New England that had a role in a sweeping decision across the New England grid to set renewables back for another 2 years, which we do not have.
I hear you. I mean, I guess the other point we should make is that, I mean, I've got in front of me the last two pages from the chairman of FERC, who was a guy named Glick, right? And it's, as you said, it's an excoriating message saying that that ISO New England, so FERC at the federal level telling ISO New England that they should get rid of this MOPR rule. But it's my understanding that FERC still needs to approve that decision in order for it to take effect. So now the Hail Mary pass is to say we should be talking to FERC to intervene because ISO New England is a creature of FERC, however it happened, right? And I think that FERC can tell ISO, wrong decision, you have to reverse yourself. And that's where the state of play is now, regardless of how this all bubbled up, right? You're saying the Peabody Peaker plant, MWEC, all this stuff made this decision. Now it's got to be stopped at the federal level. And I mean, do you have any idea when that might happen? Have you seen anything that says when, or is it we're just waiting for white smoke from the Vatican to come tell us?
In that FERC concurrence, they footnote a couple procedures or proceedings that ISO is doing apparently now to rethink the MOPAR And they urge ISO to move expeditiously in that way. And so, yes, that bad ISO order needs to be rescinded, and the 100 megawatt MWEC and BAREC project needs to be approved or at least vetted openly. The finances need to be, the questions need to be asked about whether this is really a fair market assessment of its viability or not. And the public needs to be able to weigh in, because this whole project has been a complete secret. No one knew about this 100 megawatt storage project. It's under the guise of market, confidentiality. And that's why if you Google the Westover Energy Storage Center, you won't find information on this project that they bid last year on June 18th is when the first bid by Anbaric and MWEC went into the ISO New England for that project. 4 days later, the one and only public meeting that MWEC delivered to the public, basically was not forthcoming about that and was actually saying batteries don't really work. So, you can look at the slides, which is on the PWD Peaker, MWEC website, and the slides, they basically say it's not working. Even though at the very same time, they're arguing vigorously about how great their financing is and how, look, we were able to finance the PWD Peaker even. They basically say that, so we should be able to do this 100 megawatt battery project.
Well, so I guess this is partway through the story, right? There we are, what is Homer and Odysseus and whatnot, they in media res, right? You just begin in the middle of something. We've got all these things going on at once. It's unclear what the story is. I think you've done a wonderful job of sort of looking for clues and information that we need to process. I think your call for public transparency about this stuff is a good thing. So I want to thank you for that. What we'll do is I'll put up links to the stuff that we talked about on the MCAM blog, right? That's at massclimateaction.org/blog. If you have anything that we ought to be looking at or thinking about, send us an email to podcast@massclimateaction.net. If you want to do a dramatic reading of one of these docket things, that would be an entertaining, maybe you can make sense out of the boilerplate. Of course, you're listening to us on your smartphone, probably using one of the modern podcast distribution apps. You can listen to us on most of them, except for the time being, Spotify will not find us. I want to thank our good friend D.R. Tucker for his continuing research support. We want to close where we always close, by saying that we recognize the necessity of personal accountability, that we accept responsibility for building a durable future, and then we believe it's our patriotic duty as citizens to speak out. Because of that, we have to insist that the United States transform its energy sector over the next decade under a just and equitable plan that uses regulation, investment, and a price on carbon that respects environmental justice communities. So, Nathan, thank you so much for coming on and sharing what you've learned. We really appreciate it. I hope you can come back as you learn more things.
Absolutely. Always happy to, Ted.
That's great. Thanks to everyone for listening. We'll talk again soon. Bye-bye.
Very cool.